Has this ever happened to you? You thought you were doing great at something, right? Everything was going along smoothly, but then you found out later you really weren't doing that great. That happened to me recently. About 5 years ago, I radically changed my diet. I stopped eating meat, and I started consuming lots of fruits and vegetables. And for protein, I ate fish, a lot of fish. I mean, like, every night, I ate fish. And I was pretty proud of myself, right? I was getting all those healthy nutrients. I was eating that fatty fish with the fatty acids or something. They're supposed to be really good for you, right? So I thought, I'm doing good for my body and the world by avoiding red meat and other animal products. I thought I was doing great. I was like, Father Roger, you're awesome. Yeah, I call myself Father Roger. But the other night, I was standing in front of the mirror with the lights out, and this is what I saw. And no, that's not a halo. I was glowing in the dark. Like, literally. No, I mean it. I'm not lying. I'm telling the truth. I was glowing in the dark. And, well, that didn't seem normal, so I went to see my doctor, and it turns out that my mercury level from eating all that fish was off the charts. Now I'm on a fish fast. There are times in life, right, when we know that something's wrong and we need to make some changes. But there are other times we think we're doing just fine, like I did with the eating of the fish and the vegetables and everything. But then invisible trouble you don't expect comes out of nowhere. Whatever season of life we're facing, whether we know we have troubles or maybe there could be troubles, there are always changes that we can and need to make. And that's why we developed this new series we're calling Altitude Adjustment. How well we handle life's problems often depends on our attitude. When I first learned about my mercury problem, I got kind of depressed. I thought, you know, I love fish. What am I going to do now? Am I going to have to go back on meat? What am I going to do? But then I prayed about it, and I decided to stop feeling like a victim, and I switched to a purely plant-based diet, and it's been great. See, the best way to deal with the problems in life, the turmoil, turbulence, and chaos that life throws at us, is by changing our attitude. And the easiest way to change our attitude is by getting closer to God, because He's got the best attitude in the world, right? And when we're willing to climb a little higher to meet God where He is, then we eventually get a better perspective on our lives. And when we get a better perspective, we have a better attitude. And when we have a better attitude, we can deal with problems more productively. So over the course of this series, we're looking at 6 important adjustments, altitude adjustments, we're calling them, that we can make to change our perspective and ultimately improve our attitude. Now, last week, we talked about the first of these altitude adjustments. We talked about shame, and we said a couple of things about shame. We said that it's an unspoken epidemic, that everyone has shame, some people more than others, to different degrees. And we said that shame negatively affects us. It's rooted in an identity that we create for ourselves because of something that we've done in the past we're ashamed of and we just can't get past it, or something that someone has done to us that is shameful and we have trouble healing from it. Shame is a favorite tool of the devil, we said, and the only way to heal from shame is to change our focus from who we are not to who Christ is. That's the altitude adjustment. We're changing our focus from who our insufficiencies, our inadequacies, the things that we're ashamed of, to who Christ is. Because Christ covers our shame. He redeemed us, and that makes us loved and worthy and accepted and chosen and wanted. So that was the first altitude adjustment, the journey from shame to healing. This week, we're considering another possible altitude adjustment. And I'll warn you ahead of time, it's a bit of a hard right turn from last week. One of our parishioners told me recently, came up to me and said, Father, your homilies are fine. That's the word he used, fine. A little long, but fine. I'm like, thank you. Okay, I don't have any bitterness about that. But anyway, he went on and he said, you know, but Father, I prefer the old school traditional style of preaching. I said, what's that? He said, you know, a little fire and brimstone, you know, telling us we're bad and we better change if we know what's good for us. Personally, he continued, you know, I like to come to church and feel a little beat up when I go home. Well, if that describes you, this just might be your night. So let's climb a little higher to see what adjustments we need to make from the gospel passage we're looking at today. Now, as I said, it's a complicated parable that Jesus tells, and it's often misunderstood. In fact, biblical scholars can't even agree what it means. But I'm going to take a stab at it and unpack it for you. So Jesus tells a parable about a man. He's called a steward. But basically that means he just worked for a wealthy guy. And the rich man put the steward in charge of managing his money, managing the money that people owed him. But later, the rich man learned that the steward had embezzled some of his money. So his boss calls him out on it, and he demands an accounting to find out exactly what happened. Well, the steward knows he's been caught red-handed, right? And that he's probably, most likely, almost definitely going to be fired. He knows he needs to make some adjustments if he's going to survive after he's fired. So he figures the only way to survive after losing his job would be to ingratiate himself, to make friends with the people who owed money to his boss. If they liked him, he thought, maybe they would take him into their homes and he wouldn't have to be out on the streets begging. So he calls in each of the people who owed his boss money, and he decreased the amount of the debt that they owed. And obviously, when he did that, it seemed like he was acting dishonestly, right? I mean, he just decreased the amount of the promissory note. And so at this point, the story seems pretty straightforward, right? An employee gets caught embezzling. He tries to do something to make sure he's okay after he gets fired. But then comes the huge twist in the story. Here's what it says. The master commended that dishonest steward for acting prudently. That's a shocker, right? I mean, why on earth would he do that? By writing down the promissory notes, the rich man would get back less money. Why would he commend the dishonest steward? Well, there are two common explanations. Some scholars argue that the steward must have been falsely accused, and later he found out the truth. Others suggest that the steward was actually writing off his own commission. They would do that in those days. They would add like a commission, like 20% or 50% onto the debt that they were handling for someone else. And so maybe he was just writing off the commission. But nothing in the passage suggests that what was reported about this guy was untrue, and there's nothing in the passage that suggests that he was foregoing the interest that was owed to him. No, the better explanation is that Jesus was actually using the story to make an important point. Now, just follow me here for like 1 minute, okay? It gets a little complicated, but just stick with me. Jesus was using a common form of logic called argumentum a fortiori, or arguing from the lesser to the greater. Arguing from the lesser to the greater means that if something less likely is true, then something more likely to be true will probably be true as well, right? So, for example, if you don't trust your kid to operate a bicycle safely, right, the lesser, you're not going to hand him the keys to your car, right, the greater. Does this kind of make sense? Okay, maybe not. In this case, well, I'm going to keep going. In this case, the dishonest steward did what he had to do to survive in this life. The important point is not what he did to survive. Jesus is not commending the steward for trying to cheat his boss. No, the important point Jesus is making is simply that the steward was clever enough to do something to survive. And if he was to be, here's the lesser, if he was to be commended for that, for doing something dishonest to survive, then obviously, Jesus argues, we'll be commended for doing something good to survive in the next life. If the dishonest steward was smart enough to plan his earthly future so that he'd be welcomed into people's homes after he was fired, how much more should those of us who believe in Jesus be smart enough to plan our future so that we'll be welcomed one day into God's house? See, the steward was crafty, and that's what Jesus was commending. But the steward was not trustworthy, and Jesus was not commending his untrustworthiness. Jesus wants us to be both. The point of the story is we need to be clever enough to prepare ourselves for eternity by being as trustworthy as we can with the things that God has given us. Here's what Jesus says. He says, "I tell you, make friends with dishonest wealth so that when it fails, you'll be welcomed into heaven, eternal dwellings." Now, when Jesus says dishonest wealth, he doesn't mean money that you've gotten through fraud or corruption, like the rich people that the prophet Amos condemns in the first reading. No, when Jesus says dishonest wealth, he just means ordinary money and the material possessions of this world. You know, the stuff that we have, money and stuff that we have a share in. What Jesus is saying is that when all of that fails, when money and possessions fail, meaning when we die and we can no longer take it with us or use it, what will matter is how we used that stuff in this life. So let me try to put all this together for you. The lesson here is that we need to think smart now about planning for our future in eternity. And one way of doing that is being smart, is one way of being smart about our future in eternity is becoming trustworthy with whatever earthly resources we have been given. Because obviously, as Jesus says, the person who is trustworthy in small matters or worldly wealth is also trustworthy in great ones or the rewards of heaven. When Jesus says you cannot serve God and mammon or money, he means, what he's saying is that you and I act dishonestly when we treat money and the other stuff we have as if they belong to us, because they don't. But when we treat those resources like they belong to God, then we're being smart by being trustworthy, and then we'll deserve a true reward in the next life. Now, if this still doesn't make any sense, don't blame me. Blame Jesus. He's the one who told the parable. Anyway, here's the big question. If you don't remember anything else from what I just said, here's the question I want you to remember. To what extent can God count on you and me to live our faith with integrity? We talked last week about how, you know, our shame is covered because we've been redeemed. But with redemption also comes responsibility and accountability. A friend of mine recently told me that she woke up one morning hearing the 1976 hit song by Blue Oyster Cult. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. It's called "Don't Fear the Reaper." And she woke up hearing it in her head, "Don't Fear the Reaper." And she couldn't get it out of her mind all day. As you can imagine, it was a little unsettling to her. And the truth is that a lot of people are afraid of death. They are afraid of the Reaper. In fact, most people, studies show that most people, especially people in America, still believe in heaven and hell, in eternal reward and eternal punishment. They believe there will be some kind of judgment based on an accounting we will have to give at the end of our lives. One day, it's true, we will have to tell God why we did the things we did, and we will be judged on that. There's no getting around that. Sorry, that's the fire and brimstone part of all this. But here's some good news. First of all, none of us is perfect. And God knows that, and God is merciful. Few people are really able to live up to the trust that God places in us when he gives us all the amazing things that we have. But here's even better news. Planning for the next life doesn't have to be frightening. If you're willing to be honest with yourself now and ask yourself whether there are some areas of your life in which you could become more trustworthy for God, you'll be better off down the line. Now, of course, when you start thinking about it seriously, you might find that you're on the right track, actually, that you are, in fact, trustworthy and doing the right things in most areas of your life. And I would fully expect that from you guys. But if you are like I am, you might also find that in one or two areas of your life, even in those areas where you think everything is going great, like you're eating a lot of fish, you might experience a little bit of a wake-up call when you seriously reflect on it. Kind of like that Mercury test was a wake-up call for me. The life you're leading may seem to be right on target in every respect, but what if there were some adjustments you could and should make that you don't even realize? Wouldn't you want to do that? So to help you with that, we've developed a list of questions that you could use to evaluate how trustworthy you really are. We'll put it in the weekend recap, you know, that email that we send out on Sunday nights, recapping the weekend. By the way, if you're not getting those, you can sign up on our website at sthillary.org. If you're still having trouble, just call us. We'll help you work you through it. But if you're not an email kind of person, you can also find the questions in the bulletin tonight, which you picked up on the way in, or if you didn't, get one on your way out. Take some time this week to consider those questions. Planning for eternity is not complicated. It's not a mystery. It doesn't require a PhD in theology. It's actually pretty simple. It's a matter of living with integrity and proving yourself trustworthy with a few basic priorities like, you know, your faith, your family, your relationships, and the people around you who need your help. Now, obviously, whenever we take stock of our lives in a really honest way, it can be a little unnerving. It can highlight areas we need to change, and that may seem hard or scary, but if we have the courage to do it, we can approach the rest of our lives and the one beyond with confidence. When you're willing to take the chance and get a better perspective on your life and then do something about the discrepancies that you see, it can be incredibly reassuring. And it's one altitude adjustment that, if you make it, you will never again have to fear the reaper.